Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis with the Anderson Business Advisor Podcast. And today I have Drew Spaventa on the line, and I'll just give you guys a quick background. First off, welcome, Drew.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So Drew is an individual that I was referred to actually from another client. And it was probably two people removed or one person removed from Drew since he's a principal in his organization. But I was looking to invest in SpaceX. And so I love that space. I love what they're doing. I love the satellites. I love the SpaceX when you watch them on TV and everything else. I just think that's a really cool space. And so sometimes I invest in goofy things. And that was one of the things that I wanted to invest in because I personally think it's really, really cool. But getting to be able to is very difficult. And that's where I met Drew. And it turns out that, and I'll let you get into the whole deal and explain it. But for a particular type of investor, credit investors, you're able to work with groups like Drew's to actually get access to investments before they go public. Or, you know, they may never go public. It's just private investments. And that's what he does day in and day out. He's Drew, I'll just let you explain where you are and what you do so that so I don't butcher it.
Yeah, no worries. I appreciate it. And thank you for the opportunity for introducing me to all your clients and your network. So what I do is I run a venture capital firm, and we focus on this niche that has exploded really over the last few years. And that niche is actually getting access to these late stage private companies that everybody wants a piece of, right? But the issue, the main pain point has always been, well, once the primary investor comes in, what about the other retail investors out there, right? They're private companies, you have to be accredited, but how do you really get access to these types of companies? Well, what's developed over the last few years is actually a secondary market within the private industry. So what I do, and I have other firms that I work with as well, we actually approach typically either early investors in companies like SpaceX or the actual insiders. And we actually purchase stock from them and we put it within our fund like we did with you. And then we find investors like yourself to invest in our fund. So you typically own interest within our fund. But once there's a liquidity event, because like you said, you know, Toby, it might not be for a while before it goes public. They might not even go public. They might get acquired. But once there's a liquidity event, after that, your interest in the fund is converted into the underlying shares. And that's pretty much how it works. Now, mind you, I mean, SpaceX hasn't been the only company I've dealt with. We've been a part of Spotify, Uber, Lyft, most recently Palantir Technologies, Beyond Meat, DraftKings. We have access now to Virgin Hyperloop, SoFi, Impossible Foods. The list goes on. But every company is unique. So it's really on a company basis. And that's really pretty much it in a nutshell of how the industry works. And like I said, it's starting to gain more traction, starting to get more popular. There's still a lot of things that need to be ironed out. It's not really as seamless as everybody would like. Even, you know, firms that I work with that have been doing it since 2012, 2013. I've been doing it since around 2015 and launched my firm about a year and a half ago. There's still things to iron out. But what I decided to do is really isolate myself from everybody else two ways. And that's really offering attractive fees so my clients make more money. And in addition to that, really focusing on the relationship and allowing clients access to any company that I could get them. And even besides this so-called pre-IPO market, other types of alternative investments. So that's where we're at, and that's pretty much everything in a nutshell.
Yeah. So you mentioned a lot there. So we could unpack a little bit of it. So first off, it seems you're targeting a particular type of company, a name that you probably heard of. Now, some of those names I haven't actually heard of. So how do you pick which companies you're actually going to invest in and make available to, basically, it sounds like you're just taking them out and putting them in a private placement, and folks that you have a relationship with, accredited investors, can actually invest in those private placements.
There's a few things, right? Well, number one, there has to be availability, right? Mm-hmm. There has to be selling shareholders. And that's another thing too, because to the layman, they might come around and say, well, listen, if the company's so good, or if it's so potentially a good investment, why would any shareholder want to sell, right? Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is you have early investors, like VC funds that might invest in the ground up. Now they've already made several 100% or 1,000% or whatever it is. They're looking to cash out and move into the next risky investment. Or you have insiders that started with the company 10 years ago and are have a significant part of their net worth in shares within that company. And then they say, listen, you know, I want to sell 20 to 30% of my holdings, free it up because, you know, I have a baby on the way. I want to buy a house. I want to get a nice boat, whatever. I mean, there's a myriad of reasons. So typically, number one, we have to make sure that there's availability for secondary shares. And then number two, we also want to make sure that we're getting a good deal. There's some companies out there that just based off demand go crazy in the private market. And when I speak with a few analysts, they say, well, hey, listen, you know, for example, the valuation of a company is $5 billion. But because of demand, now it's trading in the private market and these sellers want, you know, $9, $10 billion. Well, I might not want to get involved in that because that kind of hurts the client, right? However, there's sometimes where I do have clients that say, hey, listen, I don't care what the valuation is. I just want a piece of this company. Can you see if you could find it? So typically, you know, if that's the case, I will go out there, make a few phone calls, see if I could get access to stock. If I can, I'll put them into it. If I can't, you know, I'll say, hey, listen, I can't do it. But other than that, I typically do my best to isolate myself to three, maybe four top positions and just focus on those companies.
Is it companies that people have heard of before, or is it sometimes are you looking for the outlier? How do you choose which company you actually want to invest in?
Well, there's a few criteria. Typically, I want a company that has at least a multi-billion dollar valuation because there's a nice risk and reward to that, right? It's not as risky as a startup that just launched a year or two ago, but there's still reward there because you're getting involved before all the public guys get involved mm-hmm. or public, you know, investors rather. So typically I look for something, companies with multi-billion dollar valuations, mm-hmm. significant revenue growth. Typically they don't have to be profitable. Sometimes not being profitable scares some clients, which is fine. Then that's not for you, but we are in a different time, unfortunately. And being profitable isn't really indicative. Not being profitable isn't indicative of whether it could perform or not. So mm-hmm. they have to have a multi-billion dollar valuation. They have to have significant revenue growth. They also have to have large name brand recognition. Now, mind you, I know I rattled off a few names that you're not, you know, familiar with, but the way I look at it is if most investors have heard of it or are familiar with the name or, you know, based on just regular market sentiment, if it's a popular name, then I feel comfortable going into it. Because as I tell everybody, once a company does go public, the public markets is a lot more radical than private. So you have to make sure that there's shareholder awareness. You have to make sure that there will be demand. Because at the end of the day, I want to make a return for the clients. And the last thing I want is for a private company to go public after you've been holding it for a year, maybe 2 years, and it doesn't really perform the way we want. And I don't want my phone blowing up with, you know, disgruntled clients, so to speak. So we do our best to really isolate those investments that we think are going to pan out very well.
Yeah. So like the one that comes to mind is the WeWork debacle and stuff like that. How do you avoid those types of deals? Is that just a looking at the balance sheet going, there's no way? Or because there was a lot of people looking at that going, what the heck are they doing? But
yeah, I mean, it's a combination. I mean, we use data, you know, we have different data sources that we do a ton of research. And then obviously we use industry insiders and our contacts to really find out. WeWork is a company, thank God, I never got involved in. I wasn't really a fan of it. And I also didn't understand the model because it was really complex. It was simple, but it was actually really complex. So if I can't understand something, I'm not afraid to admit it and think I'm an idiot. If I don't understand it, I'm not going to get into it. You can't know everything. So we do our best to avoid situations like that. But then we have situations where, you know, it doesn't perform as we want. You know, I got an in Lyft. My clients made about 50% off of that. They were holding for a little over a year. So you might look at it as, you know, 50% is a nice return. But, you know, we weren't really getting into it for 50%. But, you know, that had a situation itself. Then we have companies like, you know, Beyond Meat, where we got in at 15 and within 2 months, it's trading at 250. And that's another thing too. So also anybody watching this has to understand the nuances of the industry. So when you make an investment in the private market, unless the company has a direct listing, which there's only been four so far, typically as soon as it IPOs, if it does have an IPO, if it's not acquired or anything like that, you're locked in for 6 months.
Can't sell it. No, you're restricted.
Can't sell it for 6 months. And then after that 6 month period, then you could sell. So kind of going back to the example I just gave you with Beyond Meat, yes, we had people get in at $15. And yes, after it went public and went as high as 240 or 250, I believe, after 2 months, but everybody wound up selling around 100, 110 because you couldn't sell at that
point. And that can be a little painful. I actually had a friend that sold a company for multiples of hundreds of millions that was his portion, sold it to WorldCom. Before they went into their, it got nailed for fraud. And so he got to ride, he had restricted shares and he got to write it down. I think he lost $138 million. He always says,
That's painful.
Yeah. He always says that, you know, I got a story that beats yours whenever somebody comes in with their sob story.
Now, mind you, there's other things you could do. And I think we've discussed this too. I mean, you could use derivatives to write against your position. You know, I'm not doing that. You know, use your broker or brokerage if you want to do it yourself. It's just my job to hold it, treat it with baby gloves, and just make sure that it's going to perform the way we want.
And this is a good time to say, this is not your capital that you have to live on. This is not your retirement money.
Yes.
This is not this is pure gambling risk. Like, assume you're going to lose every cent if it goes south. Is that fair?
Yes, that's what I tell everybody too. If you know, you want to make sure you have money in the bank, you have your retirement, and then if you're looking for a little bit, something extra, something fun, you know, something along those lines, that's where you go into the private market. So yeah. No, you're not emptying your 401k or anything like that into this.
This is getting involved too. It's kind of like the Green Bay folks, right? You may end up getting a huge return. And the Green Bay people, I think, I'm not certain whether they sell them, but it's like you have to wait up forever to get to buy a piece of the Green Bay Packers. And it's actually a nonprofit.
Yeah, you have to line up and, yeah.
It's the only nonprofit entity I know that actually has shares. But the point is that a lot of folks are getting into these because they actually believe in what's going on. So Beyond Meat is a great example. And SpaceX is a great example. You know, in other words, don't get into this just because you want to make a ton of money. Maybe I shouldn't be saying that because you may think, yeah, get into it because you want to make a lot of money.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the whole one. But no, it's I agree with you. You know, it's the part two, because as I tell everybody, what's really fun about this is the world is changing so rapidly now. You know, technology is advancing at such a rapid pace. I'm actually working on a fintech report right now, and all these different companies are disrupting in their own way. So you're getting a piece of something that could be the next big thing, you know, tomorrow. And I'm meeting so many different people from so many different industries, and you kind of realize that although you know a lot, the next day you're just constantly learning more and more and more and more. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. And that's one thing I like to do too, is I have a bunch of agents. I think you spoke to Andrew. He's the head of my private client group. And we consistently engage with clients too. You know, we let you guys know when there's big news coming out, any changes, anything else. And like I said, even though we're focusing predominantly on the late stage venture capital market right now, eventually by next year, we're also going to start exploring into the earlier VCs and other types of alternative too, because it's just really fun.
Now, Andrew's out here on the West Coast, right? He's down in California, I believe.
Yeah, he's based out in California.
And you're in New York?
Yeah, I'm in New York. So we have a nice 3 hour.
You have a little bit of real estate available right now in New York, from what I hear.
Yeah, apparently there's a 30% vacancy rate right now in Manhattan. So I heard a few times. It's been a little while. That I think you and I had this discussion. I think within the next 2-3 years, I'm going to start traveling a little bit and seeing somewhere else I could call home. I've been looking at Tennessee. I've been looking at Florida, North Carolina. I have a buddy that recommended Arizona, but I don't like spiders, so I'm not dealing with rent.
Puerto Rico for a little over half the year and then live anywhere else, and you can do away with
it. Yeah, you told me that. You were in Puerto Rico for a while and over the summer. I've never been.
Yeah, no, they just have the capital gains, have a zero tax rate in certain circumstances. So. But that's not a good reason to go to Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is beautiful and it's awesome, but anyway, so I just throwing that out as an aside. So you're down there in New York. What are like the exciting areas that you're looking at now?
Well, food tech, that's getting huge. You know, like I said, Impossible Foods is the main competitor to Beyond Meat. So we have that available. Space is going to be huge. As you know, we got involved in SpaceX. Financial technology is very, very, very exciting, but there's a lot of names and it's extremely concentrated. I love mixed reality, but mixed reality, there's not really a lot of many companies in the private market right now that are solid companies. Electric vehicles is huge. There's a company called Rivian, which is actually developing the electric vehicle pickup truck. And it's actually backed by Amazon. And I've been trying to get shares into that, but there's not really a lot of secondary sellers.
So I actually put my reservation down on a Rivian truck, like when they first came out. That looks cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So we put an asterisk on there until I'm able to find shares, but I'm definitely working on it.
What's
so
cool in food
those tech? Impossible Foods is growing. You know, they're using soy-based meats to really replace meats. I mean, I think they're saying by 2030, 2035, the food alternative market should make up anywhere between 1-5% of the total meat-based market, which isn't huge. But anybody that gets in, there should be ample opportunity for that. And I tell everybody, I said, listen, you know, meats aren't going away anytime soon. Me personally, I still like a steak, you know, I still like a burger, but I've had the Impossible Burger, I've had the Beyond Meat Burger. They taste great. And we're having this whole new trend of vegans hopping on board that's really driving sales for these different companies. So we got involved with Beyond Meat, was about a year and a half ago now. And now Impossible Foods is the next one. But their valuation is a little lofty in the private market, because as Beyond Meat tracks up in the public market, there's a significant correlating switch, increase in the valuation in the private market as well. So that's definitely an exciting company. And then, like I said, you know, we're SpaceX, it's you and actually a few other people were the last ones that we got at SpaceX. There's been a few changes over the last few weeks. I should be getting access to more, but there's, you know, there's actually a nice little story behind that and what's going on with that company as well.
I love that story. I like Starlink. And that's the satellite system to bring Wi-Fi around the world. Nobody's ever been able to do it. It seems like it's a dumpster fire for people's money when they were going in there. But Elon Musk has got his eye on it. What's going on with Starlink?
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Elon Musk, for whatever reason, is pretty polarizing. You know, I either have clients that want to really get into SpaceX because they love Elon Musk, or clients that want to shy away from it because they can't stand him. I mean, the bottom line is, love him or hate him, the guy's doing really good, solid stuff. I think SpaceX is a fundamentally better company than Tesla. We could get into the whole conversation of how I think Tesla is overvalued, but SpaceX is definitely a fundamentally solid company, right? And I think the military just approached Elon a few days ago saying, you know, hey, listen, can we get, you know, fast delivery within an hour or something like that? He just launched more satellites. It seems that every week he's either working on a rocket ship launch or launching even more satellites into the low Earth orbit. So that's definitely an exciting company. I'm currently working on getting more shares. Like I said, you were one of the few last individuals that I got involved. But yeah, ever since they raised that $1.9 billion, what was it, late August, and the fact that there's just consistent news with the company, there's just been a lot of demand for SpaceX right now.
Yeah, it's interesting. And you keep seeing it. You know, I'm one of those guys that just thinks the world's getting smaller and smaller every day. And again, I love the SpaceX, the launches and stuff, but I love the satellite, the idea of having a low level satellite system for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, Starlink's the revenue generated from Starlink by 2025 should make up anywhere between 60-70% of SpaceX's revenue. So there were even whispers about maybe spinning Starlink off in its separate IPO. And then that's the thing. You know, I have clients say, well, do I get a share of, you know, Starlink, a share of SpaceX? And the bottom line is, I'm not going to comment on that because I don't know as of yet. We'll know if that does in fact happen. But the bottom line is, a lot of people, you realize it, but a lot of people don't realize that Starlink is actually the main revenue driver for SpaceX as we speak.
Oh, yeah. How many satellites will they be putting into the lower atmosphere when it's
all? Well, they want to put 40,000, but, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, it's people need to also understand the difference between, you know, selling and saying state hyperbole, I guess, and what's really reality. Elon Musk has been able to achieve what he says he is, but it just doesn't happen. You know, typically he says it'll happen in a quarter, and a quarter spans in 5-6 years. So yeah, you kind of have to take everything that's said at face value.
And I'll just make it that. So this reminds me of when fantasy football came out. So it used to be, you know, I grew up in Philadelphia. Some people know that, some people don't. So I was like, you know, so you're watching your team. And as soon as I left Philadelphia and I moved out to Seattle, and all of a sudden you're not following your team as much. Like, they're still kind of your team, but you're not getting the day to day. Like, you're not as interested as what's going on right in front of you. And so what's that?
What's your team?
Oh, now it's got to be the Raiders, although I hate the Raiders, but the Las Vegas Raiders. And I'm like, man. So I still follow Seattle. Anything with a bird on it, I'll pretty much follow, right? So I like the Eagles, I like the Seahawks.
I was going to say, if you're going to say the Eagles, I'm a hardcore Giants fan. I mean, nothing happening this year.
Bad taste is timeless, Drew. That's I'm just teasing. I like the Giants. I liked Eli. I'm sad that they.
So am I.
Yeah, he was like, people forget he got two Super Bowls. I think
he got two Super Bowls, and he had numbers comparable to Brett Favre. So I don't know why people say, oh, he wasn't good. He was a good quarterback. He was one of the best clutch quarterbacks as well.
But I did just look at it like that. So when fantasy football came out, it just made people pay attention to it a little bit more. So the reason I bring this up isn't because I want you to play fantasy football, but it's because when you invest in companies and when you start looking at that, I believe that people are going to start to do with companies what they do with fantasy football and other things, where they're going to start to vote with their pocketbook on companies they want to support. And then, you know, it used to kind of be that way. People look at it maybe as a revenue vehicle or whatnot. But from a social conscious standpoint, if you are somebody who believes in meat alternatives, that's where they tend to generate. If you are somebody that loves space and you want to be paying attention to it, it takes you to a different level. So that when you're looking at it, you're like, hey, I have a piece of that.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the age old adage that everybody really invests in the story. Right. Everybody wants the story. Now, I love this story as the next person, but I also want to see results too. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's just, if anybody who's not named Elon Musk can't pull off what he did with having a company like Tesla grow that was not profitable all those years, yet value 10 times more than Ford and General Motors.
You look at Amazon though. Same situation. I'm scared to death of growth companies. I would never do it from a fundamental standpoint, just because I'm a cash flow guy. I like things that make money. I don't buy houses because they look good. I buy them because they pay rent. But this is what you do with your side money. And it's so much fun. I'll just say that to people. It's like, it's so cool when you get to do these things. Now, you may fall flat on your face. That's why you use your risk capital. But it is really fun when you start getting to say to somebody, hey, you know what? I was able to get in and get onto some things early. And you're talking to a guy who sat on an initial investment. I think it was 2001 that just cashed out. Sometimes it takes a while, right? Before it gets where it needs to go.
Well, that's another thing too. So what I decided to do that other firms, I'm actually the only firm in retail firm that's actually not doing it, is I don't charge a carry fee. So what that means is once the company goes public, whatever profits in there, I'm not taking 20% like everybody else. I let the client keep it because, as I tell everybody, I say, listen, you can look short term and you can look long term. There's a lot of companies that go public that don't perform well for the first one or two years that wind up blowing up years later. You know, Facebook is the perfect example. So not charging a carry fee to clients, it allows me to just deposit the shares once that lockup is done, and then they could have at it and do what they want. I mean, if they want to sell, they could sell. But I tell everybody, listen, you got in before it went public, tuck it under the pillow and just hold on to it.
And wait. Yeah. And just, this is one of those things where it's a long play, but it's fun. I just think it's cool. Now, it sounds like you get these periodically. How many deals a year do you actually invest in, if I could ask?
Yeah, no, it's fine. It depends. You know, typically anywhere between 5 and 7 companies, but pretty much on a monthly basis, I'm going out there and purchasing more shares to put into the fund. So typically what I do, and trust me, I've made mistakes over the last few years, learned what not to do and what to do and how to do it actually. But typically what I do is I'll speak to clients, I'll get indications. And then once I have sufficient indications, I'll go out there and make a purchase.
Perfect. That sounds fair. And I like the fact that you're doing that's just a handful of companies. You get to know them. You get to know what you're doing.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, I work with a few different firms. I've learned that you want to keep it to a certain group of individuals or entities, I should say, because they become reliable. Unfortunately, there's a lot of unreliable firms out there, but I won't even get into that. But that being said, you know, I do have a network where they all have different companies that they're working with too. You know, I have access to Robinhood and companies like Chime, which is a fintech company, but those are companies that I typically, for whatever reason, I'm not really actively going into. You know, I'm not really a fan of Robinhood. Chime's okay. But, you know, I could always, Virgin Hyperloop, I could get involved in, but it's not really at the top of my, you know, list. But with that being said, that's why there's some clients out there that might turn around and say, well, listen, I would like Robinhood or I would like Virgin Hyperloop. So then that becomes, you know, a case by case basis. And we could see if we could get it done. But I always like to direct, you know, clients into certain companies that are on the top of our list.
Yep. Perfect. Well, I don't want to take up any more of your time. I just want to say thanks for coming in. If somebody, like, I know we're not soliciting or anything like that, but if somebody's an accredited investor and they do want to reach you, how would they do it?
Well, yeah, my email, dspaventa@thespaventagroup.com. I'll also drop you my office line as well. I'll include my website. We have a Facebook page, a LinkedIn page. I'm personally on Twitter as well, because I think I told you I'm also looking to grow the social media presence for both myself and my firm, just to really get myself out there. Because the one thing, another thing that I've realized is a lot of these firms like to operate from the shadows, not because they're doing anything shady, but they just like to fly under the radar. And that's not me. I really want to get the Spaventa Group out there, get myself out there, and really become a known figure in this space.
Perfect.
And I thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll post all that stuff. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, they can do it. Absolutely. I liked working with you, and you came through a client that I've known and trust for years. So that's always something nice, is when you have somebody who's worked with you in the past who says, hey, this has been really great, and these guys are fun to work with.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
Thanks, Drew.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.